What we're going to do next in this next half hour segment is to jump from a disease which is now afflicting American and also apparently British veterans of the Persian Gulf War to another epidemic which followed immediately on a war. This epidemic, however, was altogether deadly. It took place right after World War One, and this was an epidemic of Spanish flu that killed a great many people worldwide, and this emerged initially among GIs at the end of World War One. It spread around the world and is once again coming into the news. We're going to turn now to the New York Times of Friday, March 21st of 1997. This is an article by Gina Colata, K-O-L-A-T-A, of the New York Times. It's headlined, Genetic Material of Virus from 1918 Flu is Found. And basically, to make a long story short, summing up this article, scientists have now come across some of the they've been able to finally locate after a long search, which will be described here. They have come up with some of the genetic material from this particular strain of flu. I would note that they are very glad that they have done this because they believe that this may enable them to treat future deadly flu epidemics, which they are expecting. I would note, however, that some of the names connected with this particular search for this genetic material are names that have cropped up in the past in connection with biological warfare research, and some of the names that have been raised by critics such as Dr. Leonard Horowitz in connection with the AIDS situation and the possibility that AIDS may have been transmitted through contaminated vaccines, either accidentally or deliberately. And Maurice Hilleman, in particular, one of the individuals cited here, is not only an individual who has worked for the Merck company, a German-owned company that is inextricably linked with U.S. biological warfare research and deployment over the decades, but Merck was also the manufacturer of the experimental hepatitis B vaccine that Drs. Horowitz and Alan Cantwell, among others, believe was the vehicle for vectoring American gays and perhaps others as well with the hepatitis with AIDS. And indeed, in the February 6, 1994 installment of One Step Beyond, we examined Harry Martin's expose in his North American Investigative Journal of the probable connection between the experimental hepatitis B vaccine and AIDS. It has not only affected American gays, but also the Indians of the Kenai Peninsula, the Dena Ina Indians of the Kenai Peninsula as well. That, by the way, is in Alaska. Turning once again to the full substance of this article, this is from the New York Times of Friday, March 21st of 1997. And again, genetic material of virus from 1918 flu is found. A group of Defense Department researchers has found genetic material from the notorious Spanish flu virus that killed at least 20 million people worldwide in the influenza pandemic of 1918. Fragments of the virus were found lurking in a formaldehyde-soaked scrap of lung tissue from a 21-year-old soldier who died of the flu nearly 80 years ago. And now, medical experts say, investigators at last hope to answer a question that has troubled them for decades. What made this virus so deadly? One part of the answer is that the Spanish flu virus passed from birds to pigs and then to humans, a mode of transmission that is thought to produce the most dangerous strains of influenza viruses. Indeed, fear of a swine flu epidemic in 1976 caused President Gerald R. Ford to mobilize the nation to immunize against a flu strain that infected soldiers at Fort Dix, New Jersey. That particular virus, however, turned out not to be a threat. The search for the 1918 virus is of more than historical interest, said Dr. Jeffrey K. Taubenberger of the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology in Washington, the leader of the team whose report is being published today in the journal in the journal Science. By the way, Dr. Taubenberger's last name, T-A-U-B-E-N-B-E-R-G-E-R. And please note also that this research is being conducted under the auspices of the Defense Department. One of the things that I wonder about is whether perhaps if the search by these doctors and scientists to fully grasp the nature of the genetic material of this deadly virus, and if they are able to fully comprehend just what made it so deadly, I wonder whether perhaps those mechanisms, those genetic mechanisms, will be genetically engineered into future microbiological agents, and whether perhaps they will crop up in the context of a future biological warfare agent, or perhaps an epidemic that is deliberately spread. I would recall in this regard something Dr. Leonard Horowitz brought up in the October 20th interview that I gave that I had with Dr. Horowitz, Dr. Cantwell, Ed Haslam, author of Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, and Dr. Garth Nicholson, who along with his wife, Dr. Nancy Nicholson, has done the pioneering work on the apparently genetically engineered Mycoplasma fermentans, which has a gene from HIV apparently added to it. In that particular interview with Dr. Horowitz, he mentioned a Council on Foreign Relations document that he was sent that recommended that the U.S. population be reduced by some 55% to the levels that it was in the late 1940s, somewhere between 120 and 140 million people. Now, the Council on Foreign Relations, although not exerting an automatic and unquestioning influence over American society, is nonetheless very influential and has had a profound effect on American economic, political, and national security policy in the past. I would not discount the possibility that the U.S. population could be reduced, at least if not by 55%, then greatly reduced, if in fact the powers that be in this country decide that it should be done. I would not rule that possibility out. Note here that some of the fears expressed by these scientists that there will be a future deadly flu epidemic like the 1918 epidemic. Note also that the genetic research being done on that epidemic is being conducted by Defense Department researchers. Continuing here. Dr. Taubenberger and other researchers hope that understanding the genetic code of the Spanish flu virus might help scientists prepare for the next influenza pandemic, which many scientists think is coming soon. The Spanish flu epidemic seems to have begun in the United States in late spring and early summer of 1918, when doctors reported scattered outbreaks in military installations where recruits were reporting for training before going to France. By September, when schools opened, the epidemic was roaring through the entire population and spreading rapidly to every corner of the world, attacking the young and healthy and killing them, often within days. The flu virus itself is gone, vanished with the epidemic. But scientists have repeatedly tried to find traces of it, studying autopsy specimens and even exhuming bodies buried in Alaska where they hoped the virus would have remained preserved. Even now, an expedition is being proposed to Spitsbergen, a Norwegian archipelago in the Arctic Ocean, about 400 miles north of Norway, to exhume the bodies of miners who died of the flu. An epidemic like that of 1918, quote, can come again, and it will, unquote, said Dr. Robert Webster, chairman of viral and molecular biology at St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital in Memphis. Dr. Joshua Lederberg, a geneticist and Nobel laureate who is president emeritus of Rockefeller University in New York, called influenza, quote, the most urgent, patently visible acute threat in the world of emerging infections, unquote. And Dr. Lederberg added, quote, the sooner we can learn what to anticipate, the more likely we will be able to blunt the next appearance, unquote, of a deadly flu virus. By the way, in a pair of half-hour segments dealing with Persian Gulf War Syndrome, we touched on Dr. Lederberg, who sat on a panel that concluded that Persian Gulf War Syndrome was a result of stress that veterans had experienced, and that they really had not been exposed to any agents as a result of neglect while they were serving in the Persian Gulf War. We also noted at that time that Dr. Lederberg was a member of the board of directors of a company which had apparently been implicated in some of the biological agents or potential biological agents that Saddam Hussein obtained from the United States. That would indicate a possible conflict of interest on Dr. Lederberg's part. He may not, however, have been consciously obfuscating the results, and I want to stress that for legal purposes. Continuing, nonetheless, his name, too, has cropped up in the context of not only biological warfare research, but even in terms of some of the companies that may have given Saddam Hussein some of the biological agents that may, and again, note the use of the term may, have resulted in some of the Persian Gulf War syndrome that our veterans have been experiencing. Continuing, Dr. Taubenberger studied specimens from Spanish flu victims that are among the millions of autopsy specimens that the Pathology Institute has been storing in warehouses since the Civil War. But he said he doubted that the study would succeed in light of the dismal history of failed efforts to find the virus. For example, in the 1950s, a group of scientists that included Dr. Maurice R. Hilleman, H-I-L-L-E-M-A-N, director of the Merck Institute in West Point, Pennsylvania, who is then directing viral research at the Walter Reed Army Institute in Washington, traveled to Nome, Alaska in a secret mission to examine the exhumed bodies of Eskimos who had died of the 1918 flu. When Eskimo flu victims died, Dr. Hilleman said, they were buried in the middle of winter in the frozen ground. The Army thought that these bodies buried in the permafrost might have remained frozen and preserved. But, Dr. Hilleman said, the bodies were in such an advanced state of deterioration that no live virus was found, unquote. Note again that Dr. Hilleman was centrally involved with vaccine research for Merck Institute, a German-owned company which not only made the experimental hepatitis B vaccine, but which also has been one of the central elements in U.S. biological warfare research over the decades. And note here that Dr. Hilleman's early research into Spanish flu epidemic of 1918 involved going to Alaska to exhume the bodies of Eskimos, and that he was doing this under the auspices of Walter Reed Army Institute in Washington. Continuing, when Eskimo flu victims died, Dr. Hilleman said, they were buried in the middle of winter in the frozen ground. The Army thought that these bodies buried in the permafrost might have remained frozen and preserved, but Dr. Hilleman said, the bodies were in such an advanced state of deterioration that no live virus was found, unquote. More recently, several scientists, including Dr. Webster, examined autopsy tissue from the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, but were unable to find viruses. Dr. Taubenberger decided to go ahead anyway. Looking in the computerized records, he requested autopsy slides of the lungs of 198 soldiers who died of the Spanish flu. In examining the slides, he looked for a particular type of pathology. Since the flu virus stops replicating within a couple of days after a person is infected, Dr. Taubenberger and his team wanted lung tissue from someone who died quickly, within a week after becoming ill, so that there might still be virus particles present. That was possible, Dr. Taubenberger said, because the 1918 influenza strain was so deadly. Quote, the lungs of some who died in a few days were completely filled with fluids as if they were drowned, unquote, he said. Again quoting, no one has ever seen that before or since. It was a unique pathology, unquote. Of the 198 cases that Dr. Taubenberger requested, seven met his criteria. But only one had other features that led the researchers to believe that the flu virus was actively replicating when the man died. The man was a private from New York State stationed at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, when he caught the flu. Quote, he was a healthy 21-year-old male with no medical history until he got this, unquote, Dr. Taubenberger said. The soldier died within 5 days of infection on September 26, 1918, and in October, his lung tissue was shipped to Washington, where it was stored undisturbed for nearly 80 years. With the soldier's lung tissue in hand, the researchers began the tedious process of trying to extract the viral genetic material. The virus carries its genes in 8 pieces of RNA that are packaged together in a protein coat. But over the years of storage, the 15,000 nucleotides that make up the viral RNA had broken apart into shards about 200 nucleotides long. The researchers spent nearly 2 years amplifying the tiny segments of viral RNA so that they would have enough to analyze and assemble like a jigsaw puzzle. In their paper in Science, they report on the consequences of 9 fragments of the virus that include pieces of its major genes. The group has analyzed only about 7% of the virus, Dr. Taubenberger said, although he expects that he will eventually be able to complete the job. Others, like Dr. Webster, agree, but say it is still uncertain whether even that will reveal the secret of the virus's lethality. But with his preliminary analysis, Dr. Taubenberger and his colleagues have already ruled out 2 hypotheses on why the virus was so deadly. One was based on an analysis of a chicken influenza virus that swept through flocks of chickens in the early 1980s, killing them overnight. The chicken virus was peculiar. One of its proteins had 3 basic amino acids at a spot where the host enzymes had to break that protein in order for the virus to infect a cell. Ordinarily, there was only 1 such amino acid at that spot. So, investigators thought, maybe the 3 basic amino acids were a clue to the lethality, and maybe they were a feature of the Spanish flu virus. But, Dr. Taubenberger found, that was not the case. There was nothing unusual about the amino acids at that position in the Spanish flu virus. Another hypothesis was that the flu had gone directly from birds to humans. Ordinarily, human flu viruses spread only in humans, but genetically distinct flu viruses also fester independently in birds, which do not become ill when they are infected. Occasionally, viruses from birds infect animals like pigs and then jump to people. Even worse, some researchers proposed, might be a virus that jumped directly from birds to humans. Antibodies of survivors of the 1918 epidemic indicated that the virus had lived in pigs before infecting humans. But the antibody evidence was indirect, and some thought it might be incorrect. The genetic analysis, however, indicated that the virus had indeed come to humans from pigs. I can't hold up one gene fragment and say, this is the reason, unquote, Dr. Taubenberger said. This is the beginning of the story, unquote. But it raises additional questions, the most immediate of which is whether the planned expedition to Norway should go forward. The trip was proposed by Dr. Kirsty Duncan, D-U-N-C-A-N, who studies medicine and geography at the University of Windsor in Ontario. Dr. Duncan learned that seven miners who were digging coal in Spitsbergen died of the flu in 1918 and were buried there. She and her colleagues have been working with Dr. Nancy Cox, the chief of the influenza branch at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, to plan the trip to Norway. Dr. Duncan said the team would meet in Atlanta. Quote, "We'll be debating on how to proceed," she said. Dr. Cox said the study of viral RNA from autopsy specimens might reveal all of the virus's secrets. The question, of course, is whether it is worthwhile to risk unleashing live viruses that might still be in the frozen tissue of the miners. There are a number of things to ponder in this particular article, beginning with that last item first. I have no idea, not being a medical expert, just how possible it might be that the live viruses from the frozen tissue of the miners might be, or how likely it might be that that would lead to a new epidemic. But I do think that that is something which should be seriously considered. Again, I'm not in a position to say just what the risk might be of a new Spanish flu epidemic from this particular virus, but I do think it's something that should be seriously considered. Also, obviously, one of the things that I think is something of great, should be a matter of great concern to a savvy observer reading this article, is the fact that this research is being conducted under the auspices of the Pentagon. Now, this is not in any way to impugn the integrity of any one of these individual researchers necessarily, yet at the same time, an intelligent study of the history of biological warfare development and of military research in general in this country and elsewhere yields the obvious fact, or it reveals the obvious fact, that when research is conducted, it is usually conducted for the purposes of eventually utilizing it in a hands-on way. And indeed, research that has been conducted into the pathology or the pathogenesis of various biological agents has frequently resulted in the past in those agents being utilized for biological warfare research. And with names like Dr. Joshua Lederberg, an individual who sat on the board of directors of a company that was shipping biological agents to Saddam Hussein, with people like Maurice Hilleman, an individual involved with the Merck Institute, Merck being a company heavily involved with biological warfare research in this country, and one of the names that Dr. Leonard Horowitz has brought up in connection with the research that may have ultimately led to the transmission of AIDS to various population groups, intentionally or otherwise, being one of the people involved with this research, and with Dr. Jeffrey Taubenberger being the individual who made the discovery of this piece of genetic material. I think the possibility that at some point in the future, if in fact these Pentagon-connected researchers are successful in determining just what it was about the Spanish flu that was so deadly, I would not discount the possibility that that research might ultimately lead to the development of biological warfare agents, perhaps even the deliberate deployment of a new and virulent flu epidemic for the purposes of, quote, population control, unquote. Now, this might appear to be utter madness to uninitiated listeners, and I can appreciate that. I would only stress that there are some very disturbing indications that, in fact, epidemics have been deliberately started by people connected with biological warfare research. And again, I cite many of the programs available from Spitfire concerning the possibility of AIDS and Ebola as genetically engineered biological warfare agents, agents that may have been deliberately spread to human populations. There are a number of different segments of various lengths available from Spitfire. I'm going to give the address, et cetera, for Spitfire in just a couple of minutes. Again, bear in mind some point that I made early on in this segment, the fact that there is a Council on Foreign Relations document that recommends that this society would be much better off if its population were reduced to the levels it was at in the late 1940s, somewhere between 120 and 140 million people. That would be a 55% reduction. And with human beings reproducing all of the time, that would entail some rather draconian population control measures in the United States. I'm not stating that without qualification that those steps would be taken, yet the Council on Foreign Relations is a very influential body, and I think that the possibility that something like that might be deliberately engineered at some point in the future in order to perhaps avoid widespread popular dissent in the event of an economic collapse and resulting political catastrophe. If, in fact, there are too many people for the goods and services and the jobs that are available, I would not rule out the possibility that people in positions of power in the United States might conclude that perhaps the population should be reduced by 55%, as that Council on Foreign Relations document recommends should be done. And I would not discount the possibility that groups of people who are viewed as undesirable by the powers that be might be among those who whose populations would be reduced. Indeed, there are some disturbing indications that that has happened in the past, and again, some of the programs available from Spitfire, for example, RFA-16, AIDS Epidemic or Weapon of War, the October 20th, 1996 interview with Doctors Leonard Horowitz, Dr. Alan Cantwell, or the doctors, I should say, Leonard Horowitz, Alan Cantwell, and Garth Nicholson, as well as with Ed Haslam, the author of Mary, Fairy, and the Monkey Virus. Also, the three-hour interview with Ed Haslam, author of Mary, Fairy, and the Monkey Virus. Segments available about the possibility of Ebola as a biological warfare agent. Segments available dealing with both the research of Drs. Leonard Horowitz and Dr. Garth Nicholson with regard to AIDS, Ebola, and the Persian Gulf War Syndrome, some of which may have been produced, some of which may result, as we have seen, from an apparently genetically engineered microorganism called a mycoplasma, as well as segments dealing explicitly with Persian Gulf War Syndrome. These are some of the programs that listeners can order from Spitfire in order to further pursue some of this research. Now, Spitfire can be reached at Post Office Box 1179, P.O. Box 1179, that is in Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, the zip code 95005. Once again, the mailing address for Spitfire, Post Office Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. Spitfire also has an email address, A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, that's one word, A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, at ix.netcom.com. Once again, the email address for Spitfire, A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, at ix.netcom.com. And you can contact Spitfire for any of the relevant archival references that I have made, some of the interviews that I've already alluded to, some of the half-hour segments that I've produced, as well as longer programs such as RFA-16 and the aforementioned October 20th, 1996, three-hour interview with the Drs. Horowitz, Cantwell, and Nicholson, and Ed Haslam of Mary, Fairy, and the Monkey Virus. And again, I would strongly encourage listeners who are skeptical and or concerned to follow up on the article that I just read and follow up on some of the lines of speculation that I've engaged in and to flesh out your understanding of these particular matters. Now, a number of people have inquired about Other Means. So that's a publication that I'm in the process of launching. The quote, the title, by the way, comes from the famous quote from Prussian military theoretician Karl von Clausewitz, who observed that, quote, "War is the continuation of politics by other means." I am not in a position to discuss that at any length or in any detail because that is a for-profit venture. So please do not write to me at KFJC anywhere else to find out about that directly. Instead, if you're interested in obtaining more information about that, and again, I cannot discuss that in any length because it is a for-profit venture and this is non-commercial radio, please contact other means at Post Office Box 191710. Post Office Box 191710, that is in San Francisco, California, zip code 94119-1710. Once again, other means, P.O. Box 191710, San Francisco, California, 94119-1710. There's also an email address for other means, demory@well.com. Once again, demory@well.com. And please do not contact me directly for information about other means. That simply adds another loop, I guess you could say, to the chain of communication and makes it more cumbersome. That is the email address and the regular address to contact in order to obtain information about other means. And for reasons I've already explained, I cannot discuss that in any detail on the air. And this concludes this particular half-hour segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.